DeMille is one of today's most popular thriller writers. Born in the Big Apple, he graduated from Hofstra University. He served as a first lieutenant in the U.S. Army from 66 to 69 and saw action as an infantry platoon leader with the 1st Cavalry Division in Vietnam. Nelson was decorated with the Air Medal, Bronze Star, and the Vietnamese Cross of Gallantry. I'm sure you're familiar with many of DeMille's titles: The Gold Coast, The General's Daughter, Plum Island, The Lion's Game, Nightfall, The Lion and the Panther. And I'm sure, like me, his character, John Corey, is one of your favorites. Today we'll speak with him about The Quest. It's quite the page-turner. Let's see if we can get the inside scoop. Welcome, Nelson. It's a thrill to have you with us on The Book Report.
Thank you, Elaine.
I want to start by saying The Charm School is one of my all-time favorite books. My first cousin was a U.S. Air Force pilot in Vietnam. His plane was shot down, and he remains an MIA. And when I read The Charm School, it knocked me down.
Yeah, it's, based on some theory. The Charm School is about what happened to over 1,000 American pilots who were shot down over North Vietnam or Laos, and in the Charm School, I postulate that they wound up in Russia to train Russian spies to look, act, and talk like Americans. And that was something I'd heard when I was in Vietnam myself in 68. And there's actually a show on cable TV now called The Americans, which is kind of the same thing, about training Russians to infiltrate American society and to become Americans, but really to become fifth columnists. So it's a fascinating, I think, subject. And sorry about your cousin, too, by the way.
Well, thank you. All right, let's talk about The Quest. It's a rewrite of an earlier book, one you wrote nearly 40 years ago. Why revisit the subject matter now?
Well, that's a good question. The Quest is about a search for the Holy Grail. It takes place in the jungles of Ethiopia. And the story itself is timeless, obviously timeless, because we've been telling it for about 2,000 years now, and I'm not the first one to interpret it. You have everything from King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table to Monty Python and the Holy Grail and everything in between, including Dan Brown and the Da Vinci Code and that type of thing. So, and also Indiana Jones. In fact, I call the book Indiana Jones Meets the Da Vinci Code. So it's kind of it in a nutshell. And it was really a good story, and when I wrote it in 1974, published in 75, I didn't have many fans. I think I had maybe a few dozen fans out there, and the book appeared as an original paperback, and it was never a hardcover. So, you know, with the passage of almost 40 years, I thought that this was a good story that really deserved a new audience and deserved different formats, not only hardcover, but e-books and audio. And the publisher agreed. And so they said, go ahead and try this. And it's kind of odd, or I shouldn't say odd, but rare for best-selling novels to go back to a much, much earlier work. And this may start a trend, hopefully, because there's a lot of good stuff out there that could use a rewrite. And it was a challenge, but I'm glad I did it. And I think the story is fresh. And now it's available for hopefully a much larger audience.
Right. Talk about how you research your books. I mean, this book is set in Ethiopia in 1974. You write of the brutal fighting, the Amhara, the Galas. So do you get all the history down? Do you visit the country?
Yeah, you know, when I was writing the book, these events are actually happening in 1974, 75. So a lot of the research was just done with the newspapers and some TV coverage of what was going on in Ethiopia. I'd never done that before, but I think that maybe that's what compelled me into writing the book, because it was an interesting revolution. It was a Marxist revolution that toppled the emperor, Haile Selassie, who was a very heroic figure. And Haile Selassie traced his ancestors back to the Queen of Sheba and King Solomon. It was a 3,000-year-old dynasty that was coming to an end. And at the same time, of course, there was this myth that the Holy Grail and the Ark of the Covenant were in Ethiopia. So I kind of combined this, and I was a history major, so I understood the history part easily enough. And I, like a lot of kids, I grew up with King Arthur and Knights of the Round Table. So it was a fun story to write. When I put it all together and I came up with another version of The Search for the Holy Grail, and it got good reviews. But again, it didn't have a lot of play back in 1974. So when I rewrote it, I saw that the research held up pretty well. There wasn't much I had to do. It had a good feel for the time and place. And mostly I worked on the characterizations and worked on cleaning up some of my bad syntax.
Speaking of characters, I just want to do an aside here. And where did you get the inspiration for John Corey? Is he based any part on you, your humor, your dashing good looks?
You're very kind, Elaine. Right. We've met in the city, in New York City, before. Well, I don't know. I know that you've met me. No, I am not John Corey. John Corey is taller than me, for one thing. But John Corey is NYPD, retired now, working for the Joint Terrorist Task Force. And he's really a composite of a lot of police right now. I know people in the Joint Terrorist Task Force. And they've been very kind to me and giving me info and letting me visit their headquarters at 26 Federal Plaza in New York City. And John Corey, of course, being a cop and working with the FBI, who are very straight and very proper, and he's sort of a cowboy, so it's kind of an amusing situation. He's a man's man, but the women like him, too. I think maybe you'll agree, I hope.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of my fellow thriller lovers think that, for example, The Panther is one of the funniest thrillers I've ever read. So some of my colleagues want to know if you were always a wise guy.
Well, you know, my earlier books, even the bestsellers, didn't have a lot of humor, and I instinctively knew something was missing from the books. But, you know, when you write, you're supposed to be serious, but one of my books, The Gold Coast, I decided to give this guy a wry and very sardonic sense of humor, and it really worked. And then when I went to John Corey, NYPD, of course, cops all over the world have a funny sense of humor, and I brought it into the book. And even though the subject matter is serious, the sense of humor is going to come through. It's kind of that dark humor, that gallows humor. When things are going wrong, you kind of make a joke about it.
So when I was doing the research for this interview, I learned you write your books using pen and paper. Why, and have you ever tried writing on a computer?
Well, I can't type, for one thing, but even if I could type, I don't think I would type the first draft. Certainly would not type the first draft. We all learn how to write with a pencil and paper, and this is how I write. And it's got a better flow. It's just easier. I don't have to deal with the machine. I can, hopefully my brain is engaged and my hand is engaged. And also, with my other hand, I'm looking at research material, notes that I've made. I enjoy the writing process. I mean, the physical writing process of writing out a whole manuscript longhand. Usually I do two drafts, maybe sometimes three. And then I give it to my assistant to put on... put it to the computer, and then I can play with it on a computer. Sometimes I'm here, you know, late at night writing, and I feel like a monk in a cell illuminating a manuscript. But it's fun, and I think I'm too old to bother to learn how to compose on a typewriter, so it's okay. I'm going to leave well enough alone.
All right. Well enough is pretty darn good. What's your next project?
Well, the next one is a John Corey novel. I wanted to give John a break. And John Corey is back. We don't have a title yet, but he's back in New York. The last time we saw him with the Panther, he was in Yemen in the war on terrorism. This time he's in New York, but he's not going to be involved with the war on terrorism in this new book, Islamic terrorism, I should say. The new bad guy is going to be the Russians, partly because of what's happening in the world and what's going on, you know, in Putin's Russia. So John Corey has a very... very tough adversary in the new book. He's battling the old KGB, and hopefully that book will be out this time next year.
All right, and are these bad guys going to go around bare-chested, or are they actually going to wear shirts?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, because I've done a couple of Cold War thrillers, as you probably know, and I kind of miss the Russians, and I think a lot of writers miss the Cold War and miss the Russians as bad guys, so this should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Nelson, any upcoming film projects?
Yeah, but not feature film. Cable TV has come to me, Sony TV, and they want to take the first John Corey book, which was Plum Island, and make it into what they call a limited series, which is 6 one-hour segments. and they will do Plum Island in 6 1-hour segments, and they have Aaron Eckhart, who's a very good actor, who's going to play the part of John Corey. And if the first one, Plum Island, is successful, they're going to take each of the next 5 John Corey books and make them a limited series on one of the cable channels.
Hmm. And when can we look out for that?
You know, with TV moves very quickly, it could be as early as this fall. Not this fall, but I should say next fall. And it'll be called, probably be called John Corey, Plum Island. We have to come up with the title so we can tie the characters together, the character together with the entire series.
Mm.
And I'm looking forward to working with it because they've asked me to do a little work with them. And I don't normally do screenplays, but I think I would like to do this.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to it, too. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Elaine.
All righty.